All right, good evening. My name is Perry and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Perry.
Thank you, Billy, so much for asking me to come speak, and thank you to my sponsor for facilitating this as well. I'm really happy to be here tonight. It's definitely a gift and a miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm here sober tonight, and that I'm able to speak in, you know, somewhat coherent sentences. We'll see if I can pull that off for almost an hour. My sobriety date is October 6, 2023. I live in Charlottesville. My home group is there, as well as my sponsor. And I also sponsor a few women in town, which is definitely a great honor of mine. And my sobriety date is not the first time I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I think I first came to AA a few months before that, sometime in April or May of 2023. It's a little bit blurry for me. Per the recommendation of a professional, they thought I should come to AA to make sober friends. That was kind of how I was sold on the program. I really did not know anything about alcoholism or Alcoholics Anonymous at this point in my life. And, you know, when I came in, it just felt like I had a lot of problems. You know, just a lot of problems going on in my life. It felt like there were more and more of them every year. And it used to kind of be, it felt like a tradition of mine that around, you know, on the new year, I would sort of like reflect on the year that had gone by and think to myself, like, how does this feel even harder than the last year? How does this feel even harder than the year before that? Like, it didn't feel very sustainable. You know, so the idea of coming somewhere to meet sober friends, I was trying to get sober at the time, was not yet sober, but it sounded like a nice idea. And, you know, there was a point in my life where alcohol seemed to fix all of my problems. You know, and it's hard for me when I think about who I was before I ever started drinking. You know, I can't quite pinpoint, you know, what about me was alcoholic? What was something else? You know, I don't know. I can just kind of like look back at how I was as a child and see, you know, I was full of fear. I was very neurotic from a very young age. I always remember feeling like I was more of an observer of life than a participant. You know, I can remember just sort of like watching people and wondering like how are they doing that? How are they talking to other people? How are they here? How are they having fun? You know, there's something that just didn't quite make sense to me. You know, I'm not sure what that was, but that's how I felt from a young age. And I grew up outside of Charlottesville. I'm from kind of the Rust Belt area of Pennsylvania originally. I'm the youngest of four, and I would say, an obsessively obedient child. I know a lot of alcoholics talk about, you know, being very rebellious or disobedient. You know, our literature kind of talks about our instincts being sort of just haywire. And I think I was like far in that opposite direction. Incredibly obsessive about rules. I didn't want to do anything wrong. I was very obsessed with what other people thought about me. And in turn, also just very kind of obsessed about myself and how I felt and how I was perceived. And I really just wanted you to think I was good. So I didn't want to get in trouble. I wanted to do well in school. I wanted to do well in sports, whatever it was. I just wanted you to think that I was good. And that was, you know, looking back, the best way I can describe it, but that was kind of my higher, I think that was my first higher power in life. That was sort of my driving force. And I thought about it. I don't know if that is kind of like this early manifestation of the spiritual illness, the spiritual void, that I was trying to fill it with something, you know, validation from other people. I don't know. But that is what propelled me in my earliest years. And that's how I was known in my family too. Like, I was the golden child. My siblings would tease me and call me Perfect Perry. Like, I didn't even want to drink coffee. For some reason, I just had this aversion. You know, I wanted to be like pure. I didn't want anything to alter me. Just wanted to be on the straight and narrow, be good. And I didn't grow up with any alcoholism. When I think about my parents, the big book talks about there being kind of hard drinkers, and that's how I would describe my dad. He just seemed to kind of always be able to have a good time and drink a lot, and things never really went wrong. And that was sort of how I saw alcohol in my life. And I don't really, I can't really describe it. Like, there were these things that felt like they so strongly defined who I was. It was almost like my first mental blank spot. But I don't know, when I was 16 and the first time it was ever available or offered to me, I just said yes. It was just as simple as that. And the best way I can describe it is I feel like I sort of just fell into my alcoholism. It feels like it just happened so quickly, but like experiencing that miracle of like getting outside of myself, that like sigh of relief. My shoulders finally relaxing. I finally don't care what you think about me. It was amazing. I loved it. Like I said, alcohol seemed to kind of just solve my problems, solve those like inner neuroses that I was always wrestling with. And from ages like 16 to 18, it was much easier for me to get my hands on other forms of alcohol, other substances. But it was immediate. Like I was getting messed up pretty much every day, and my double life sort of started just as quickly. I kind of like reveled in going to high school and like hearing my name on the announcements because I won some race, and I'm like, nobody knows that I'm drunk right now. Nobody knows that I'm messed up. Like that double life was pretty intoxicating to me. But I still really wanted to be good. It was like I now had these kind of like dueling forces within me. One was to feel good, and one was for you to think I was good. And that still was propelling me, and I was able to show up like that, I think, for a really long time. I think on the outside it looked like I was a really hard worker. I had two jobs in high school. I used to have one before school, one on the weekends. It's just because I wanted enough money to get loaded, But to everybody else, it was like, oh, she's such a hard worker. Like, look at her. My parents were so proud and people were very impressed. But, it's like I needed the money for my own reasons. Wasn't because I was saving for my future or, thinking about anything like that. But it was very intentional, like making sure I was keeping these parts of my life separate, making sure that I was trying to control the image that you had of me, that you thought I was good. And I made it through high school. And when I first got sober and got into AA, like my memories are still kind of all jumbled and things are still coming back. And I was like, I don't know if I drank that much in high school, actually. I was like, I don't remember it. But then over time, it was like, oh my God, I drank every chance I could get, whether it was like taking it from my parents or like paying the homeless guy or, that dude in my high school had facial hair and could like pull off getting it, I'd like from that one liquor store downtown. Like, it was like, no, every opportunity I was pursuing it. Like, that mental obsession was very prominent very early on. But I did, I made it through high school like without any like huge scrapes, a lot of what I would call, close calls. Like, I definitely had some friends who got arrested, but I hid in the right place, like they didn't find me. Just sort of like the high school shenanigans is kind of how I categorize it in my mind. But once I went off to college, and I was able to drink the way that I really wanted to. And for me, that looked like blacking out multiple times a week. And I really didn't put much thought into it. I think in my head, it was just like, this is what I'm supposed to do. Like, you get older, you get a license, you get a car, you get drunk. Like, this is just what growing up entails. And for me, I think I had this narrative of myself that I was like, I work really hard. It's like I just do everything in life really hard. Like, I work hard in school, I work hard at my jobs, I drink hard. Like, it's just who I am. Like, I push myself. And for some reason, that made sense to me. Like, of course, I push myself with my drinking too. Like, of course, I push that to the limit because that's what I do with everything. I excel in everything, including getting very, very drunk. And I was very good at getting drunk, and I was really bad at being drunk. And like at the age of 18, I had this really amazing opportunity out of high school to like. I signed to be like a D1 athlete at like this really great university. I was really excited. And a month before school started, I was like, I really don't know if this suits my lifestyle. I'm going to move across the country because I got a scholarship somewhere where they had different laws. And I was like, I think this is much more suited to what I want to do and what I want to pursue in life. And I lasted about 2 semesters. And then I had to take a medical leave. And to the outside world, it was like Perry's having health problems, Perry's struggling with her mental health. But really, I was definitely like beginning to go down that slope of like alcoholic insanity. And I was starting to lose my mind. I definitely was. Like, that part was true. Nobody knew to the extent to which I was drinking. And at that time, my bar was kind of like, at those points, it was like I consider myself a cat. I was like, I always find my way home. As long as I wake up in my bed, everything's okay. It's like I would come to from my blackout. I'm in my dorm room and I'm like, everything's fine. One time I woke up with like a dislocated jaw and a chipped tooth, but I'm like, everything's here. I was robbed, but I'm here. I'm in my bed. And pretty soon it was like, as long as I'm waking up, maybe I'm not in my own bed, but like, waking up somewhere, that's good enough. And I really couldn't lower that bar fast enough, for what I found to be acceptable for my life. And yeah, I moved back home after a couple semesters, kind of got my stuff together a little bit, enrolled back in school locally in Charlottesville, and pretty much continued on my way. When I was 19, I had a really scary experience where I was taking antibiotics or something where it says, like, don't drink on this, which every time I had ever been prescribed anything that said, don't drink, I drank because I don't know, for some reason I was like, well, who are you talking to? Like, this is stupid. I don't think this is real. I don't know. I just didn't think anything applied to me. But I don't really know what happened this night, but I was taking this medication, I drank. I think I took some other stuff and I woke up almost like a day later, kind of just like in some weird position on the floor and I couldn't move. As far as I know, I think I had seizures. My body was like really stiff. My mouth was more dry than anybody's mouth should ever be. Like, I felt the only way I can describe it is just very close to death. And I couldn't move for I don't know how long. And eventually I like scrambled across the floor to my bathroom and just started like chugging water. And the only thing that kept playing over and over and over in my head was, it's all fun and games. It's all fun and games. It was the only thing I could think. And the first time I saw The Shining, that scene where it's all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy over and over and over again. And that like shook me to my core because I've been there. I've been in that kind of mental state where I just seem to have like lost all my faculties, and this was like the only string of words for some reason that was just playing over and over in my head. I didn't really tell many people about this. I think I saw a doctor and they like prescribed me something because I think they thought I was crazy. And life kind of just continued on. I don't know. I had so many of these like really scary experiences that I sort of just like brushed off as, I don't know, a part of life because it was a part of my life. I kind of thought that's what happened to most people. And it was interesting because I got my first kind of adult relationship when I was in college. And this really brought to light, some things about my lifestyle that to me had been a problem. To my boyfriend, certainly were a problem. I found it embarrassing if I were to like wake up in my puke. That's not a fun thing for anybody to go through. Suddenly my boyfriend is like pissed off, and he thinks I'm disgusting and he's like, "Why are you doing this to yourself?" These weren't really questions I had asked myself. I just thought this was a product of, if I don't know. Like I said, falling into my alcoholism, I really didn't ask a lot of questions about what I was doing or why I was doing it. Like it was just sort of a free fall. Like I had to drink. I loved drinking. I thought I did. But now suddenly there's this person. I hear a lot of people talk about, taking hostages, who was in my life who was like, what is wrong with you? This isn't okay. Like you need to figure this out. And this began the first point in my life where I actually tried to moderate my drinking. And it's just like the big book talks about. We had all these discussions. He used to play in a band and, we'd go to cideries and it was like, okay, just cider. I'll just have five. For some reason, 10 drinks was this like magical number in my mind that like I thought that's how much I deserved to drink, how much I should drink. So anything under that was like a reasonable negotiation. But no matter what the number was, I could never stick to it. It was like three, five, six. Didn't matter if it was like liquor or, nothing. It never mattered. And it seems so crazy to me now, but truly at this point in my life, it never crossed my mind to stop. Like the thought never ever crossed my mind that I should stop drinking. I just figured whatever happened while I drank was kind of somebody else's problem. So, a lot of the boyfriends that I had in my life when I was drinking were more like babysitters or, I somehow wrangled a few who didn't drink a lot, so they were often my designated drivers. And then I had boyfriends who like could be drunk and drive a stick and roll a cigarette at the same time, and that was great, but it amazes me now looking back that it just I really don't think I ever thought about stopping. It was always it just wasn't even an option. It really wasn't even an option to me at that point. And at this stage in my life, that first kind of higher power that I had that wanted me to be good, that really wanted you to think I was good. It was still there. I still cared. It's like I wanted to do well in school. Like I wanted my parents to be proud of me. But now it's like I'm okay with the C's and the D's. As long as I can just kind of get by and show up and as long as nobody's worried about me or looking at me too much, like just don't worry about what I'm doing. Like it's fine. I'll get by, I'll figure it out. And I did. I managed to make it through college, not with that relationship intact with my first kind of, serious boyfriend I had. But after that point, I moved on and I found somebody. I'm 22 and I found somebody who was twice my age and had a record and was somewhat, known in town. And I thought like, this is maybe more my speed. And it was funny because we talked about like running away together and like living on a farm in Madison. It was like, oh yeah, if we can just get away from society and all those like judgmental people, who knows? Like that's I don't know. That's just what I thought would suit me at that point in my life. But it turns out that didn't really work out too well either. And I got to a point figuring out what to do and just sort of decided that not only skipping town, but skipping the country would be a good idea, and I went overseas for 2 years. So that like geographic cure, I think I maybe felt a little weird about that re last relationship, and Charlottesville's a small place, and I was like, I don't really know what that was. I sort of just continued on my rampage. Kind of felt like as long as I was single, I could do whatever I want. I wouldn't be stepping on anybody's toes. Nobody could really yell at me for my drinking. I remember pretty vividly from this point in my life, like coming to in a hospital parking garage and just being so drunk and so confused. And like, it was like a maze trying to find my way out. I don't know if I was hospitalized or somebody just dropped me off there. Eventually I came to and woke up at home with like ramen in my bed. I don't know. It was just like the chaos and my absolute kind of just lack of any kind of consideration for my own well-being and anybody else's well-being, like, is really astounding to me standing here today. Again, still kind of just in this free fall. This is just my free fall of alcoholism. But I found another very nice boyfriend there, and he really did not drink very much. And this is kind of like burned into my mind as my year of controlled drinking. He was like, he worked in business and we would rock climb together, and he was so nice. And he was the first person who I ever was like, I could see myself having a kid with him. Like, he's just such a good guy. But I insisted that we drink at dinner. I was like, we could make this fun and like make fun cocktails and like, please, let's make fun drinks at dinner so we could drink at dinner, And I really started to lose my mind. I really started to lose my mind. I couldn't get a job all day. I would just sit around absolutely clawing for 5 o'clock to come. It's truly, it's all I thought about all day. I would just be at home, watch TV, whatever, just trying to patiently wait until it was socially acceptable for me to drink with this person. And like, this year is so, it stands out to me so much. I only got blackout drunk twice. I remember the times, and it's amazing that that's like memorable to me. But it is. And it's just, it always seems to take the same course. Like, it's just inevitable that like at some point, whatever it is I'm trying to hold on to just wasn't enough. Like, that relationship wasn't enough. My life there wasn't enough. I had to drink the way that I wanted to, and I wasn't able to do it. So it's just another chapter of me kind of coming back home. And this would be about, 2020. I'm trying to get a job. I end up getting one. Things kind of lock down, and I find myself in this group of people. At that time when you were supposed to have a small social circle, who all pretty much drank the way that I did. And to me, it was like the Avengers. A bunch of superheroes came together, and we created this team of people who all just like to get really, really, really drunk and really messed up all the time. And it just absolutely imploded. I unfortunately have a friend from this time in my life who's no longer here. Another friend whose, people's lives were altered from this point. Like, it was just a really ended up ending really in a really messy way. And it was also during this time that I formally got a mental health diagnosis. I'd had many of them throughout my life, different ones, like from a young age, generalized anxiety, panic attacks, all this stuff. Like I said, I was a very neurotic child and would have fits of anxiety from as young as like 13. But I was finally given, a more robust diagnosis and thought like this was fine. I thought I finally had the answer. I was like, okay, this is what's wrong with me. This is why everything is so chaotic. I finally got it figured out. I just have to get on the right medicine. And this was a thought I had before many times drunk. It was like something is chemically wrong with me and alcohol fixes it. You know, it's like some people take vitamins, but like, what's a liquid vitamin? You know, that's kind of how I thought about alcohol at times. It was just like, this just kind of tweaks things in my brain just the right way where I can feel good and feel normal. And yeah, I thought I had arrived. I thought I had the answer. And I really did not. You know, I mean, any doctor I've ever seen in my life, I feel like never really stood a chance of doing their job because I'd never been honest with any of them. And there was no exception here. And what followed was like a year and a half of a really painful experience in psychiatry. You know, I was on and off like 12 different medications over the course of a year, like got and then quit five jobs in a very dramatic manner. Was just incredibly, incredibly unstable and insane. And all the while, I'm at a point now where I'm really starting to dabble with trying to stop drinking, mostly by putting a bunch of other chemicals in my body. And at times it would work. You know, I could get a stretch here, I'd put the bottle down, I'd get on a new medication, try some other new stuff. Think I would have it figured out, would think I could drink normally now. And it never lasted. But you know, that is where I was when I came into AA. I was still trying Perry's program, which was putting down the booze, picking up a bunch of other stuff, and thinking that was sober. And you know, I really did not want to stop drinking when I got here. I really wanted to stop drinking and I really didn't want to stop drinking. Like it was like terrifying, like in my body, viscerally terrifying to think about stopping drinking, to think about being sober. You know, but I hung around. I came to a few meetings and I remember my first ever meeting, like I got a big book with a bunch of women's names. A bunch of people gave me hugs, which I was very uncomfortable with. I genuinely felt like a feral animal when I came here. Like I'd become so socially isolated. I really did not have any close friends. I did not leave the house unless I had to. All my blinds were down. Like I was not participating in the world like as much as I could help it. And so when I came to AA, like I was very uncomfortable just being around people. But everybody was really, really kind to me. And there was one woman in particular who kept reaching out, like would invite me to things. And I thought there must be something really wrong with her, or like she must not have any friends. Like, why is she trying so hard to hang out with me? Like, she must be lame. I don't know what it is. Like, she's desperate for for something, you know. I couldn't quite figure it out. But you know, I started hanging out and I would go to fellowship dinners. I went to meetings. My head was just like full of judgment. When I would share, it was like very poetic and I don't think made a lot of sense, but like I fancied myself, you know, really smart. And like I'd read some Carl Jung, which to me gave AA some like intellectual legitimacy. I was like, oh, well, if he was involved in any way, maybe there's something here. But you know, I still was not sober at this time. And I got a sponsor and then she dropped me because I wasn't sober. She said she didn't know how to work the steps with somebody who wasn't sober and was not intending on getting sober. And I was so pissed. I was so resentful. I thought she was so mean. I was like, I'm gonna leave AA because of this person. And like, how could, like, what is this? You know, like, so I stopped going to meetings for a little while. Just like, full of resentment. I was like, that was wacky. I don't know. And then I had a friend from my past reach out to me who had actually come into the program and just invited me to a fellowship dinner. And so I came, I was with a bunch of other people from the program, and I ended up ordering this dessert. I didn't know, but it had some kind of booze in it. Just this very boozy whatever. And at this point, I hadn't drank for a little while, but when I tasted it, I was like, this is hot and spicy in some weird way that I don't quite know. I was like, this is some weird fancy chocolate. Like, is it cinnamon, cayenne? And the second it registered to me that it was booze, like, the world just kind of caved in on me. Like, it really did. My face got hot. I ate it all because I was like, oh my God, like, can I get drunk? You know, like, is this gonna get me fucked up? And it was amazing because I was at a table of sober people who were in recovery. They were not affected at all. Like, they were not affected. They weren't bothered by it at all. They were just like, oh, that tastes like booze. That's gross. You know, here were a bunch of alcoholics who had a program, who had a higher power, who were in that place of neutrality. Meanwhile, I am like dying inside, like fighting for my life, just having tasted, you know, whatever very insignificant amount of alcohol was in this thing. But it was amazing because that for me was the moment when I was just like, oh my God, I'm powerless over the taste of booze. You know what I mean? Like, I can't do this. And that's when I actually started my journey, you know, in earnest in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a home group. I got a service position in my home group. And I loved my first job was just being a greeter, and it was great, you know. Like, I, like so many people, who was just so scared of the world and distrusting of people, you know, getting to know everybody's name, and now they know my name, you know, feeling like I'm actually useful and contributing to something. It was like a huge turning point for me. You know, and I feel lucky because it was like the program, I finally just let it really like sink its teeth into me. You know, before when I was coming to meetings, it was like, I didn't want to be one of you. And I didn't want to be a part of this. I just wanted to be kind of like a visitor. And I wanted your friendship, and you know, I liked some of the stuff sometimes people said in meetings. A lot of times I didn't. And I think at the point when I was like actually ready, you know, ready to be here, I was suddenly like very excited about AA. And in my first year, I had like four different sponsors. Some of it's circumstantial, like one sponsor moved away. I don't know. It just that's just the way it happened for me. But it did take, I took, I don't know, I want to say like 8 or 9 months to get to my first few amends in the steps. And that for me is where the miracle happened of the obsession to drink being removed. And I really couldn't believe it because early sobriety was not fun for me in AA. You know, going to meetings and like as much as I loved it, just hearing people talk about, you know, how much their life had changed and how happy they were, you know, sitting there and still being riddled with the obsession and not drinking is not was not a fun place for me to be. And as I was going through the steps, I just felt like I was like doing everything wrong, you know, just like, when is this gonna work? When am I gonna feel better? Like, what am I doing? Like, how, when, why, you know, just full of doubt. And it was really reassuring for me, you know, working the steps with my sponsor, just how often I was encouraged just to keep going and knowing that like I wasn't gonna figure it all out, you know, just do the things. Be honest, which I was not my first time, you know, on my first go at the fourth and fifth step, when I read it all to my sponsor and she asked, did you leave anything out? I absolutely did. And I thought about exactly what I did not say. And I told her, no, I did not. You know, and we kept going through the steps. And I feel extremely lucky that I did not go out at, like, because of that. But when I think about how miserable I was, you know, in early sobriety, I'm sure that had something to do with it because I did kind of feel like a fraud in AA. You know, it's like I knew I was going to lots of meetings and doing service, but like I still had these secrets. And Yeah, I feel lucky enough I got to the point where I was uncomfortable enough, and finally I was like, Crystal, we need to talk, I need to tell you some stuff. And so yeah, I don't know, maybe I would have had that kind of like great relief and spiritual experience after doing the fifth step if I had been more honest, but that's, I think I was honest as I could have been at that moment. I just feel lucky to still be sober. But yeah, for me, after I made amends to my mom, I don't know when it was. It was just, I was just like going through my day at one point and realized like, I'm not thinking about alcohol right now. And it was like such a revelation to me, and all those firsts in early sobriety, like, the first time I just like went for a walk and the point of it wasn't to get drunk. The first time doing anything and realizing that I'm actually there and just present. I'm not thinking about like my next step. I'm not scheming about, how I could get my next fix, how I could get more drunk. Do I have enough money for booze? Who's going to be there? All the kind of like calculations that I had to do in my active alcoholism. It really was, yeah. I really thought for some reason that I was just special and this program wasn't going to work for me. Today I still have, I think, two amends. There's somebody on my amends list who is in another country, but I'm hopefully going to see them soon. So I'm excited to be able to do that in person. I tried my hardest to just maintain that momentum with my amends. It was weird shifting into a place with the program where suddenly, like, my butt wasn't on fire and I wasn't doing all this stuff out of desperation. It was like shifting into this like new phase of recovery where I'm like, oh, I'm not thinking about alcohol all the time. Like, now I have kind of a different relationship with the steps and a different relationship with how I show up in meetings. And like, oh, I can help other alcoholics now. And it's really amazing for me. Like, I do think I was excited to learn that I was, officially allowed to sponsor once I got there. I don't know if maybe I was just a little, had a little bit of an ego or just thought, I could really help somebody out. But yeah, I don't know. I felt ready for it, which sort of felt like every step, like once I got to the 10th step, I was at this place where like my night felt kind of empty and it was like, oh, I get to do these inventories here now, and like, oh, in the mornings I pray, and which was something I started doing pretty early on because I was open to it. But I really tried to fill up my life with service in AA, and something my sponsor told me pretty early on was, it's not about fitting AA into my life, it's about fitting my life into AA. And that fell like pretty hardly on my ears. Like, I was like, that seems really intense. I don't know. Like, I just really don't want to drink. But as time goes on, those kinds of things like sink more deeply into my understanding. I think like it has become the highlight and like bright spot of my life, being able to work with other alcoholics, either as their sponsor or just as a fellow. I know somebody who's going to be coming up on a year, and like I got to be there with her through all the like crazy phone calls when she was new. And I remember when that was me. My sponsor had me call her every day, and I just had so much to say. Like, there was just so much running through that like crazy early sobriety mind of mine. Everything seemed to be like so dramatic and chaotic. And I finally got to be kind of on the receiving end of that for somebody, and it really felt like such a gift to be able to give that to them, because I remember being that way. I don't know, it's just like all this lifetime of chaos, and suddenly there's somebody who will kind of listen to you a little bit. And I really do think it's amazing too when I think about my relationship with my higher power, today compared to, when I was first sort of chewing on all those steps that talk about God. Because I was really tangled up about steps two and three for a while. I really wanted to figure it out. I really wanted to have some kind of like very concrete, easily understood conception of a higher power. Because the big book says that's like precisely the purpose of this book. And there's still that part of me that just wants to be good and wants you to think I'm good, and I want to be the best sponsee my sponsor's ever had, and I want to like be able to impress her and everyone else with my relationship to my higher power. But it feels really right and really good for me today, knowing that there's like so much I don't know and so much I won't know about my higher power. And that is what feels right and connected to me. My higher power does feel bigger than something I can fully ever grasp and understand. When I think about God's will, I'm like, is God's will just like one thread in the fabric of the universe that I'm striving for? Did God weave the whole thing and everything that happens is God's will? Or if I'm striving for God's will, does that mean I cannot do God's will? Can other people not do God's will? I don't know. These are like fun things for me to chew on. And there was a point in my recovery and my sobriety where I like really thought I had to have the answer to all those questions. And maybe someday I will. I don't know. But right now it feels mostly like I like when I hear people talk about that, thinking is for entertainment purposes only. That's sort of how I feel about those things now. It's fun to kind of like wax philosophical or spiritual or, and, but it is amazing to me, that like without having some very concrete understanding, I do feel steady in this moment. I feel steady in my relationship with my higher power. And I would get kind of confused sometimes about what turning my will over to God is, and like, is prayer an action or is this just a thought? Like, I can't think my way out of problems. Like, where does prayer lie on that spectrum? I don't know, but as I've had more practice with it, prayer does feel more like an action that I participate in. And my relationship with my higher power is something I participate in, whether I'm actively acknowledging it or not. I love reminding myself that like I can choose to acknowledge my higher power at any point. I can talk to God whenever. I can invite God in at any point during the day. Yeah, and I just can't believe that I feel so okay today. And I say that kind of on like a very deep level. Before I came here today, I was like trying to figure out how to prepare, and I ended up looking at this journal that I kept in early sobriety, and it was like 107 days, and I would like write crazy stuff about how I was feeling. And on day 266, I talked about how, like, I don't know if I'm cut out for life. Like, I can't go grocery shopping forever. Like, maybe I just can't handle this. And then I wrote, I was like, this sounds depressive, but I see how alcoholic this is now. It's like forever anything feels impossible because I don't have forever. But like, I can do this one day at a time, whether that's, grocery shopping or staying sober. And yeah, just being able to like reflect on where I was a little over 2 years ago. Like when I was new, 2 years seemed like so long. And now, I mean, it does. This is the longest time of sobriety I've had since I first drank, which feels incredible. But I can't believe I still feel so new, and I'm happy I still feel new. I'm happy that I still know that I have like so much more to learn, and that my relationships with the steps will just continue to kind of evolve and grow, I hope. I mean, it has to. The big book talks about like deepening and enlarging my spiritual life. So I might, the next time if I'm ever asked to speak somewhere, I might have like a totally different way of talking about my higher power and God. And I feel good about that today. So I think that's all I've got. Thanks for having me.